Hello, everybody. Today is Sunday, March the 6th, and I am your beautiful host with another beautiful edition of Special Needs with Special Circumstances. We have a beautiful host today, speaker. Her name is Catherine Fisher, and she is here to share her story. Unfortunately, she had a sister on the autism spectrum that passed away in 2019. So, Catherine, do you want to go into a little bit about that and how all that began?
Okay, so my sister was 6 years older than me. So, growing up, all I ever knew was my sister. And because she was like kind of low functioning and she wouldn't be able to basically like live without additional support, I always assumed that I would eventually be her caregiver one day when I got older. That all changed the day that she passed away. When I found out the news, it was pretty hard. Honestly, we hadn't seen my sister in over a month. So back in 2017, she had had a skin picking disorder since a young age, but in 2017, she woke up and she had two swollen eyes, and we think it was like a bacterial infection of some sort. So we sent her to the hospital. They sent her home with us with like cream to put in her eyes, which she would absolutely not tolerate whatsoever. So I would try my best to do it like while she was asleep, because that was the only way I could get the medicine on her. But that was very difficult. And she would usually wake up, she'd like rub it out of her eyes, and you know, then she started picking at the skin underneath her eyes. So we were scared because of the fact that she had such a severe skin picking disorder that we were nervous that since it was so close to the eye, that if she were to like end up doing some type of damage, that she would end up going blind or, you know, so forth. So we ended up sending her to the hospital. The hospital, we had a lot of back and forth with her being sent back too soon. You know, like we basically had to like have her go inpatient and stay there. And for a while, you know, like she spent a lot of time in the emergency room, in the ICU. She spent a lot of time in the psych unit as well at like multiple different hospitals. So the reason why we were nervous that she would like maybe possibly like cause herself to go blind is because back, I would say probably in like 2007, 2008, my sister threw a stereo system down on the floor while she was having a meltdown, and it smashed her toe. And it was like one of those old stereo systems that was like very, very heavy from back in the day, and it did a lot of damage. She ended up kind of breaking her toe. Her toe ended up going black and blue, and then she started picking at the swelling. So she picked her toe literally down to the bone. So we ended up having to bring her to the ER for that, and her toe ended up needing to be amputated. So that was very hard for her too. I wish we had better resources for people on the spectrum with skin picking disorders specifically, because the doctors really didn't know how to handle it. We dealt with her with the severe skin picking from 2017 to 2019. She was in and out of hospitals. She was home for most of 2018. But in 2019, she had to be sent back because she ended up reopening her scars, and they weren't really like scars. They weren't healed completely. But Yeah, so she ended up reopening those, got sent back to the hospital, and she had had a traumatizing incident back in 2017 when she was originally, like, in the hospital for everything. They sent her to a DDS run. It's a state facility in Massachusetts.
Yeah.
It's called Hogan Regional Center in Danvers. And when she came home from there, we had her come home, and she, first off, she wasn't fully healed. So she ended up going right back into the skin picking, like, really, really bad. She was having nightmares every single night. She was urinating and defecating herself in her sleep and just, like, on the floor while she was awake. She couldn't hold it. She was, her medication list had, like, doubled since she had originally went into the hospital. So basically, they just dealt with her by sedating her because they didn't know what else to do with her. They did that, and they also restrained her. My sister was in at least 2-point restraints, but generally 4-point restraints for a good chunk of 2017 and a good chunk of 2019. So basically a year of her life, including her birthday back in 2017, she spent in the hospital in restraints. And I find that really sad. We had a lot of issues, though. But if you have any questions, just let me know.
When you... Thank you for that. That was beautiful. When you first learned that you had a sibling with special needs, or that you were going to have a sibling with special needs, how did you feel about that? Like, was that so hard for you?
This might sound a little weird, but I didn't really know any different, because, like, my sister was 6 years older than me, so I mean, I always just knew her as my sister. I didn't know, like, I don't think I really understood that anything was wrong with her until I was probably about maybe like 9 or 10. That's when I was like, oh, she's definitely different from, like, my friend's siblings. Or, you know, I would have friends come over and they would ask me questions, you know, what's wrong with her? You know, because, like, she usually either wouldn't talk because she was very, very shy when she was younger. And then when she got a little older, she was more talkative, but she would mainly just repeat herself over and over again. Instead of, like, the same word, the same phrase. Instead of, like, being able to have, like, a conversation like you and I are having right now. That wouldn't happen.
And you became her, her caretaker as you got older.
Yes.
Now, how did that all come about?
Well, I had been taking care of her since a young age because I would help my parents, like, help her, for example, like, take showers and stuff like that, because my dad didn't always want to do it. And my dad was her official PCA worker. And then we brought on, like, external sources. We ended up finding my best friend, and I had known, my best friend had actually known me since I was in my mother's womb. So she was there before I was even there. But she helped raise my sister and I for the most part until, like, I was probably about, like, 8 or 9 as well. But yeah, I mean, like, I've always just known her as my sister, and I never treated her like she had a disability.
And I first off, my hat goes off to you, because you know, giving someone that level of care and then still having to try to take care of yourself, it's it's really difficult, but my hat goes off to you. And I'm sure, the skin picking, did you, because I know, like, a lot of people who don't deal with special needs, they would probably be, like, freaked out about that.
I have literally, like, I felt like I was living in a horror movie, no lie, from, like, 2017 to 2019. It was bad. But, you know, so, like, I've seen some very traumatizing stuff, but I've been so desensitized to it over the years because my sister has kind of always been like that.
Okay.
It's been something that her psychiatrist could never, like, get under control. And certain meds that she would be on also have that as, like, a side effect, like, you know, skin picking. Yeah.
And how old was she when she passed away?
She was only 29.
That's very young.
Yep.
That's super young. And what was her name?
Yeah. Her name was Nicole.
Okay. Did she, so she had your parents' last name?
Actually, no, we all have different last names.
Oh, okay.
So, my sister had a different father who, he actually was kind of like a walkout, and he didn't want to deal with it when he found out that his daughter had autism. You know, he said that he couldn't handle that. And he ended up telling my mom, you know, like, you're on your own. So luckily my dad stepped in, and my dad had been there ever since my sister was a little kid. So she had a very special bond with my dad, between my father and then Terry, my best friend, who she actually passed away a year and 21 days after my sister did. From cancer.
But, oh my. So.
Yeah. But Nikki had a very, very special bond with her, though. Like, I think if kindred spirits are a thing, I think they were it. I absolutely do. Like, there was no one who could get through to my sister like Terry could. It was awesome.
I see. I mean, the. You know, me doing this interview, I just, you know, of course, you know, it's beautiful, but then at the same time, it's also a little bit emotional. It's emotional because,
of course,
me being on special needs myself and having cerebral palsy and to see what we go through on a daily basis is really hard. And the whole point of, you know, doing this and interviewing people is to get the story out there, to get people aware of who don't have to deal with a lot of these things that these beautiful individuals have to deal with. I mean, even for myself, growing up in a household, being the only one in my family having cerebral palsy and my family not really understanding how to deal with that. And even still today, they don't know how to deal with that. Certainly, coming from a household where they were abusive physically, mentally, and emotionally, that was also hard. Was there ever a time that, because I know you said that her regular dad, the different dad just walked out. Was there ever a time when you were taking care of her, did you think that the care was hard for you?
Did I think that the care
was hard for you? Like, taking care of her.
I mean, absolutely, at times. She was definitely hard to handle at times. She could be very aggressive when she wanted her way. She wasn't always physically violent, but for most of my childhood, she was definitely very physically violent towards me. But I knew deep down, like, it wasn't her, you know? But when I was a very little kid, like, when I was, like, maybe, like, 4 or 5, and she used to do it a lot, I used to get very upset, and she would attack me, and then she would start crying when I would start crying. And I didn't understand that it was probably because she was overwhelmed because she couldn't control her emotions. And meanwhile, like, I'm a little kid, I can't control my emotions either, and I'm being attacked, you know? So it's like, I don't even know what's going on. And I would get pissed off, and I would, you know, I would yell at her, and I'd be like, why are you crying? You know, nothing happened to you. And I would fight with her a lot, you know, as a kid, because I really didn't understand. And then when I got probably to about, like, the age of, like, 15, 16, I started really, really trying to help her in, like, any way that I could. And I mean, I had always done that, but, like, it was just, like, on a different level. Like, I tried spending more time with her. I tried getting to understand her more. And she had been, like, going through a lot, like, whatever she was going through. I'm not sure what it was, but, I mean, she would tantrum a lot and have meltdowns a lot. And I use those two different words because I've definitely seen her have meltdowns, but I've also seen her have tantrums because my parents used to reward bad behavior. Basically, when she would tantrum, they would try and be like, hey, Nikki, do you want some ice cream? Or, you know, hey, Nikki, are you hungry? Is that, you know, like, that was, like, their solution. So a lot of the time she knew, like, if she threw a fit, she would get what she wanted. But I've definitely seen her overwhelmed as well. And I've seen, like, I've seen the two differences.
All right. I think at times, you know, when we're going through things that we're going through in our life, was she able to verbalize what was wrong with her?
So she had
like a stomach ache or something, she wasn't able to tell you?
For the most part, no. Every once in a while, you know, like, she would, like, announce something, or, like, she would say, like, you know, my stomach is so upset, or she would say, like, for example, like, I am so sad right now, you know, and then she'd start crying. She did know, like, proper emotions and stuff like that, and, like, what each emotion means, like, what happy means, what sad means, what angry means. She, you know, she knew the differences in that, but she, I'm not sure, like, how to put this, but, like, she probably, like, I would say, like, it was kind of like talking to, like, a 4-year-old.
Yeah. Yeah.
If that makes sense. It was very basic language, you know. She didn't really, like, know how to really express herself.
Absolutely.
You know, it was just like, it was like the bare minimum, and we would generally have to kind of, like, pull it out of her, like, hi, Nikki, how are you doing today? You know, like, and then she would tell us eventually, if she decided to.
Right.
She was funny.
Right, and I think
She knew, like, you know, how to talk, but, like, she would go through her phases where it's like, no, I'm not going to talk to you. I'm not, you know, I'm going to be shy today. I'm not going to talk to you.
Were there times where you could remember when she was in, like, her happy moods, where she was upbeat and...
Oh, absolutely. There were definitely a lot of happy times with my sister. And she had, like, the greatest laugh ever. Like, she had one of those, like, giggly laughs that, like, it would make you start laughing. Because she would just start, like, giggling, and it would just sound so funny. And you would just have to laugh with her, no matter what. Some of the, like, simplest things, like, amused her, like, and would just, like, crack her up. Like, I don't know why, but, like, farting was one thing that she... Anything involving poop, which was gross, but okay, it would make her laugh. Anything like involving animals, like she would usually like giggle at the dogs, like playing around, you know, or if we made funny voices towards her, like, or towards anyone, you know, just in general, we were like, hey, what are you doing? You know, something like that. She would just crack up. And it was like the best thing ever, because it was like you could just make her day just by, you know, the simplest thing. Like, and I really love that. I admired that about her.
You know, what I admire about you, if I could say, is that, you know, the fact that you are able to share this beautiful story with us right now. And the fact that this is the whole reason why, you know, I started this podcast 2 years ago, because anyone right now who has a child or an adult that has a disability, and if you guys are going through something right now, it's always nice to know that there is someone who is out there listening and who we want to help you get your story out there. You know, during the pandemic, there was a lot of us that were struggling and that are still struggling. And, you know, we have to find different outlets and different services. And even, you know, me living in Las Vegas, we don't have a lot of different services for the disabled. And which is really sad, because we should have more than we really do.
I absolutely agree with everything you just said. And first, though, let me say I also really appreciate you having me here today to share my story. But yeah, I mean, I live in Massachusetts, and we are supposed to have like the best of the best with hospitals, with resources. And I've found that it's very, very hard to find services, especially when someone with disabilities turns over the age of either 18 or 21, they typically age out of the system. And then your only real options are like group homes or a locked facility, you know, and they're trying to get rid of locked facilities. But in my sister's case, she needed to be somewhere that was a locked facility because she had safety awareness issues and she would bolt. So group homes out here, it looks like any other house on the street, and you can basically come and go as you please. They expected like my sister to like get a job and, you know, like all kinds of stuff. And the thing is, like, it wasn't to her capabilities. I'm sorry, but it wasn't. And I would have loved that for her as well, but, you know, that's not the real reality. And, you know, the lack of resources for people who are like, you know, on different parts of the spectrum, it's just really sad to me, because we're in 2022. I mean, autism is something that's been around for decades and decades. You know, it's not a new thing. We've known about it, and we should know also like how to manage, like, or help them manage their behaviors. You know, like we don't want to, you know, like take all independence away. Absolutely not. But we also need to know like where the boundaries are and like where, like, you know, this person can take care of themselves or if they can't, you know.
And when you were trying to fight for services for her, did you find that you had to go through a lot of red tape? Like,
were you getting
told no a lot, and you just...
Yep.
Did it get to
the point?
Did it get to the point?
So, my mom dealt with much more, but I, of course, you know, saw a lot of what my mother had to go through with my sister. So my sister had pretty severe autism. She really couldn't advocate for herself whatsoever. And my mom had to fight year after year to get her, like, IEPs and, you know, to get, like, proper, like, psychologists, psychiatrists. Also, finding dentists was very, very hard. And there's a lack of understanding when it comes to, like, medical services, because my mom has had to fight with health insurance so many times because of the fact, like, my sister was a person of her own. You know, you couldn't force her to go somewhere. If she decided she wasn't going to an appointment, that was that. We could not drag her, like, you know. So we would miss a lot of appointments, you know. Insurance wouldn't want to cover it because she would be considered a no-show on the medical side, you know, which, I mean, I can get it from their perspective, but at the same time, it's like, we can't control, you know, whether or not she makes it to a doctor's appointment or not.
Right.
You know, even if she wasn't over 200 pounds, I mean, even if she wasn't, you know, we're not going to drag her to a psychiatry appointment, you know, like, and then they wouldn't want to refill meds over the phone. They wanted to see her. And it's like, yep. My mom would have to prove year after year she actually had autism, and it's like, and that it didn't go away. And it's like, come on. Like, you know, it's a lifelong disability, you know. It's not, it's not something that's curable yet, at least.
And it's funny you mentioned that. I'm actually dealing with that with Social Security right now, because they're saying that, oh, you have a work injury and you're going to be able to heal from this work injury soon. But what they don't know is I've had cerebral palsy ever since I was born. The award letter, the first award letter that I had ever gotten from Social Security was back in 1988. So for them now, for us to be in 2022 and for them to be saying, oh, this is a work injury, and now, you know, I have my own rep PE fighting through this mess. It's like a whole big mess because they don't want to give me what I'm owed. But, you know, she's fighting through this whole big mess right now, having to prove to them that, yes, he has cerebral palsy, and she's sent in this redetermination paperwork I don't know how many times. And it's just like, it's just a whole big nightmare. And but getting services, trying to find a dentist, going through all this red tape, it's exactly like it is here in Vegas. It's no better, you know. And it's sad because they put all this, Nevada is way too big for this. We get all this money, and they put all this money and all these other things, but when it comes for services for the disabled, there's like, oh, we can't put money into this or that, and they just choose not to. So that's where our services just lack more and more and more. And so then when it comes to autism, Down syndrome, spina bifida, schizophrenic, bipolar, all these different disorders, they just get looked past. And then we don't have enough medical facilities or resources to be able to, you know, catch a lot of this stuff really early.
Yeah, I absolutely agree.
But, it's really, really, it's heartbreaking.
It's frustrating,
yeah.
Yeah. And heartbreaking.
All at the same time, because I had never been in a state that just treats special needs like we're nothing. Like, we're just supposed to be put in a Pandora's box. And it wasn't until I came here I learned how disabled are really treated. and how we're still treated every day. This is why I do this podcast. This is why, 2 years ago, I started speaking out, and I will continue to do it because I feel like more and more every day, we need to spread awareness about the disabled community, what goes on in the disabled community, whether you're in Las Vegas, whether you're in Texas, whether you're in Boston, Massachusetts. And that's why I take the time to find these candidates, and so that they can come on the show and share their story and tell you a lot of the things that they have experienced and battled with over the years, and just to for people that have never dealt with this, that are new to this, so that they get a insight and a full eye view, you know, of what really goes on in these beautiful individuals' lives. So I mean, that's what that is. And I mean, for Sin, I'm just gonna give a shout out to her too. For Sin trying to, for putting you in my path. Sin, she's a very sweet individual. She's very, she's got an autistic son, and actually that's going to be my next upcoming guest that's going to be on the show. She should be on the show in a couple weeks. I've been trying to pin a time down with her. And if you guys aren't aware, you can find my podcast on Apple and Spotify, Special Needs with Special Circumstances. Go and follow it. You never know who may need to hear one of these stories. There may be a mother out there, a father, a grandparent, who may be dealing with a similar situation, and they may need to hear this. And I always tell people, you know, you could always be one car accident away from being like us. And, you know, you have so many people take life for granted all the time and don't know how good they have it. So
absolutely,
it's always important for us to remember that we should never take life for granted, and we should be blessed for everything that we have and that we're given. So to Sin, I really appreciate her and you know, putting me in touch with with you. So we're definitely going to be getting her on the show soon, so that she can share her story and tell you what it is all about. But so do you? And I always ask this question. Have you ever thought about like working with special needs?
I have, but I don't know if I would be able to mentally handle it.
And why do you?
So.
And why is that?
Well, a little bit of it is like the patience, but also like I'm not sure if I could deal with like it. Say for example, like someone I had to help or like teach or something like that did like a lot of crying and screaming. I'm not sure if I can honestly handle it, because I dealt with that for a good amount of my life already. And yeah, my sister used to throw herself down pretty much every single day for years and years and years. She would get on like one of our like chairs, it's like a computer chair and it has wheels. She would get on that and she'd use it as like a launching board to basically dive onto the ground, and we couldn't stop her. There was nothing we could really do.
I think, and this is my thing, I think you would be capable of doing it, only because you've had a sibling that has had special needs, I know it's a little different because she was severely autistic.
Yes.
And I recommend to a lot of people to deal with special needs. And I do that because I feel like that they haven't, you know, they just have a knack for it. Like, a lot of people just, they just have the skill set for it. I definitely think that Sin would be a good person. She was actually...
Oh, I agree with that.
Yeah.
Definitely.
With her being a behavior specialist, and I've recommended to her a couple of times that she should definitely get involved.
The other thing is, I also have physical disabilities myself, and so do both of my parents. So
oh, okay.
Both of my parents are physically disabled. I'm not physically disabled, but I have multiple disabilities.
And what do they have, if you don't mind me asking, what do you have?
Well, both of my parents have rheumatoid arthritis. My mom has osteoarthritis, but she needs a double hip surgery done. And she has two locked hips. She cannot go up and down our stairs in our apartment building.
Ooh.
And and she can't get a stair lift. So the thing is, she has to hire EMTs to come and lift her out of the apartment every time she wants to go out to a doctor's appointment. So that's another story for another day.
Yeah.
That's a whole separate issue. I've seen the lack of resources in all areas, like for physical and intellectual, emotional, everything, learning disabilities.
Yeah.
I've seen
same
it
here.
In all areas.
Yep, same here.
So yeah. But, where was I going with that? I lost my train of thought for a split second. Sorry.
Oh, you were telling me the diagnosis of what your parents had.
Yes, yes. So my mom, she also has edema in her legs. So, which edema is swelling, so it's all basically just like full of fluid.
Okay.
And they're very, very heavy, so she wears compression boots every night, but it doesn't do much. But basically, she's on a walker and she moves very, very slowly. It's hard for her to go far at all. Like, and for far, I mean, like, imagine like maybe like 10 feet. That would be like a mile for her. It feels like forever. Yeah. And I, as for my dad, he also, other than the RA, he has like spinal issues. He's hunched over. He uses a cane to walk around. So as for me, I have rheumatoid arthritis. I just found out earlier last year. I also have osteoarthritis.
Oh, so it runs in the family.
Yep. I had already suspected that because I started having bone spurs pop up all over my body. So I had suspected that because when it all started happening, I was only 24, and I'm 26 now. So I've been dealing with all of that for about 2 years, and that's been its own hurdle, but I have that. I have fibromyalgia, and I have something else wrong with me. I'm not entirely sure. They tell me I have carpal tunnel syndrome, but I know that it's not carpal tunnel syndrome. I have like either like a pressed nerve or something like up in my like neck area, like, or something else is going on. But it's definitely not like carpal tunnel because I've been dealing with it for about at least 10 years. I'd say 11 years now.
Wow. Are you are you on medication for these things or?
Yep. I am on a lot of medication. For the physical pain, I'm not on any like painkillers or anything like that.
Okay.
But it's just stuff to like help manage the pain.
How many medications are you on?
if I were to, hold on. I'm on at least 9 different medications right now.
Wow.
I would say I'm probably on a little more than that because I also have other issues. Like I have like acid reflux, but that's nothing. But that's like, it's just like another pill. You know what I mean? It's like, right. It's like we just like, we got into the, you know, doctors got in the habit of instead of treating like, you know, whatever it is that's, you know, causing one thing, let's add another pill to it, or, you know, like, this one causes acid reflux and heartburn, okay, well, let's give a pill to counteract that, you know, basically, and it's like, I don't know, I don't get it.
Do you have trouble sleeping?
Sorry, trouble sleeping?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I do as well, from the chronic pain, and I also have insomnia in general. I was going to say, I also have ADHD as well.
Yeah, I think you told me that on the call yesterday. We talked about ADHD. Wow, you are, let me just say that you are a trooper, though, because you're navigating through all this stuff. I mean, to be only 26, wow. You wouldn't think that a 26-year-old would have all this stuff going on with them.
Yeah, I know, right?
It's pretty crazy, but
I'm lucky, I guess.
and it's a blessing you're still here. But yeah,
definitely.
I think that, you know, this has definitely been a big eye-opener for me, and I'm sure it's going to be a huge eye-opener for my guests, and I can't wait for them to hear it and them just to take so much from it. And I would love to get you back on the show again because I think we need to have you back on again. Definitely.
Yeah.
Because I think that it would really spotlight a lot of stuff and what, you know. And even with people without disabilities, once, you know, they hear your story, they'll be like, man, you know, I never knew that, you know, they get a different sense of a different sense on life and just how to be nurturing and loving and compassionate.
Yeah, it's, I mean, my entire life has been an eye-opener for me.
I'm sure it has.
Like, seriously, it's been a wild ride. I mean, and I didn't even get diagnosed with ADHD until last year.
Wow.
But I do agree. I definitely want to come back on the show because there's more of my sister's story, but it's a lot to get into all at once.
Yes, please. I don't want to get all into it at once, but we'll take our time, go in sections, and this will be the first segment. I really want to have you back probably at the end of this month, I'm thinking.
Okay.
I know I schedule ahead. That's how I am. But
no problem.
I definitely want to get you back on the show the end of the month. I'm definitely going to try to get Sin on the show because I've been trying to get her on the show for a long time.
Yeah.
But I want to thank our beautiful guest for being on the show today and sharing her story. And it's definitely very courageous of her and just tell by the character and her grit and determination and to be 26. Wow. Again, that's a blessing that you're still here. So, I mean, you definitely have a purpose.
Thank
you. And we just want to thank you, and we're definitely going to get you back on the show next month. So this has been another beautiful edition of Special Needs, Special Circumstances. I've been your beautiful host, Benjamin, and we will see you again very soon for my next beautiful guest named Sin. Have a good day, guys.